And right now, it is time for us to take a look at the Lakeville Journal. This week in the Lakeville Journal with Cynthia Hauswinder and Janet Manco. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. Did I dial the wrong extension?
You did. I'm at Lila Hawkins' desk today, but it's exciting.
Okay.
But it's my fault. I should have sent you the email reminding you.
Well, no, I have two here, and I said for some reason I didn't go to one I normally go to. But it all worked out. It all worked out.
It did.
Got her exercise for this.
That's right. That's right. As you said, his fingers.
You know, it's an interesting, when I look at the front page of the Lakeville Journal today, and I see the picture over the story, Lakefront Landowners at Odds Over Expansion of Protective Regulations. But even it's a stark picture because it shows you some construction, but it shows you also the beauty of the trees and the lake and everything like that. This is a very big story.
This is a huge story. And it's a huge story for the people that are involved, but it's also a huge story for all of us. And it's about a story that's really been happening for decades, which is Twin Lakes, which used to be this very remote part of Salisbury and really was a summer cottage community, and actually was often a summer cottage community for people who lived in this area, so that if you lived in Salisbury Village or North Canaan, you would take the train and your family would, it's like sort of like Mount Riga, like the family would spend the summer in their little cabins and Dad would work at his city job and come up on the weekends. And Mount Riga has been ferociously protective of the old way of life up there, and there are so many restrictions on what your property can be like. And nonetheless, there's still a lot of construction up there, a lot of much bigger houses, but nothing like what's happened to Twin Lakes, where most of those little uninsulated cottages are now often quite big, fancy houses. And Twin Lakes is an unusual lake community in the sense that it's very separate from Salisbury, so that if you live in Twin Lakes, the chances are that you're not down in town all the time, that you don't have a lot of social friends in Salisbury, that you're certainly not really tuned in to town government here. And so you have the people who live on Salisbury's Lakeville Lake, Lake Winnanskapomic, who some people feel are maybe a little bit overprotective and sort of jump very hard on any kind of a change, while at the same time allowing like unbelievable construction along the lakefront. There's been a lot of people who have just gone ahead and done things without checking on regulations, or who have managed to get permits just through whatever means were available to them. So it's not like that lake is as pristine as it could be or should be. But the Lake Association there has been trying to get the Inland Wetlands Commission to update the lakefront development regulations. And for years, they've been fighting hard against what is really a lot of human use on that lakeshore. Whenever anybody builds a house or builds a driveway or has a roof or cuts down their trees, it's allowing runoff from the roads and the houses and the cars and the chemicals in their laundry to seep down into the lake. And that's the reason why we have those incredible weeds there that have to be chopped down multiple times each summer. So that's especially bad at Salisbury's Lakeville Lake, but it's also very bad at the Twin Lakes, where there are two lakes. One is almost filled up. That's the lake that we were discussing earlier this year with the causeway issue. And so now you have a face-off between the Salisbury Lakeville Lake group, who is saying, we need to really tighten up these restrictions, and also there's a lot of old regulations in the books that need to be brought up to the state standard. And the people in Twin Lakes are saying, hey, we don't like that. A lot of us aren't here, so we didn't even know that there was a meeting, and we feel that you did it sort of in the dark, so you need to start the process over and include us. And they've created a separate lakes group called the Salisbury Lakes Homes, which really only includes the Twin Lakes residents. And they're saying our parcels of land are very small, and if you put in these new regulations, we're going to have to go to town hall and get a permit every time we want to do anything on our land at all. So the Lakeville Lake people are saying, well, we're not really trying to restrict what you're doing. That's your, like, you deal with it. But we want to have these as a town-wide lake regulation. So this is a battle that's brewing up between these two organizations over the health of the lake and the future of, especially of Twin Lakes.
I'm sorry, I side on the side of being cautious. If you want to do something on your property, check with the town and see if you can do it. And that's the way it should be. But it'll be interesting to see how this goes, because once again, it's almost an us versus them situation. And
curiosity, how just broadly, 45 years ago, how was it done?
Well, the regulation now is that you have to get a permit if you want to do anything within 200 feet of the lakefront, and now they want to make it 75 feet. Yeah. And a lot of these small parcels, they're saying in Twin Lakes, if you count 200 feet, it goes from the lake all the way past the house, all the way over to the road. But on the other hand, you know, you can see in that photo, which is taken in Twin Lakes, they're building pretty darn close down to that waterfront.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll go on to another story there, and this is something we talked about on the air, but there was a community forum outdoors in Sharon down by the ball field, and there were a lot of questions and a lot of answers and a lot of, we'll look into it, on the speeding problem in Sharon.
This is another one of these ongoing problems, and this one really is, it's countywide, maybe even worldwide. And there was a similar conversation about this in Salisbury many years ago on Indian Mountain Road, where people were really using it as an alternative to the main road and often going at quite high speeds. There was one really bad crash I remember there. I feel like the driver, I can't remember, was going some extraordinarily high speed, and it was early in the morning. I think she was rushing to or from a shift actually at the hospital, and tragically went off the road and hit a telephone pole and died. But speeding is very bad around here, not just from locals who live here, but also because people are passing through here to go to other places. And so the residents of Hilltop Road in Sharon are saying people are using our road as a rural minor collector. They're taking a shortcut past Sharon Center School so that they can cut maybe 3 minutes off their drive if they're trying to get from Route 41 to Route 4. Which I think that many of us do. I don't think they mind that you're using the road. I think they mind if you're going in a big hurry, especially because the school is there, but also because, you know, it's a small, private, quiet street. So what they had done in Salisbury years ago is they had tried using speed alert monitors. They're talking in Sharon about putting humps in the road, which are tricky because people end up driving on the grass. And what they also found when they were doing this in Salisbury was that many of the people who were actively fighting against the speeding cars, when it came right down to it and they were keeping records, were actually speeding themselves. So it's a very it's a tricky awareness issue. And Curtis Rand in Salisbury has actually done a lot. Val Bernardoni did a lot on what they call traffic quieting. And there's a lot of different ways that they have found to do it, such as building bump outs and cutouts into the sides of the road. So Salisbury Village actually is a very good example of different techniques for quieting high-speed driving.
And those have worked. I mean, there's some problems with them every now and then, but those bump outs have, as somebody who travels that road all the time and has for the past 15 years, traffic goes at a much slower pace now than it used to.
It's what they call the gateway. Like your mind looks at it and goes like, oh, the road looks different. Yeah. And then you kind of look around and go like, oh, I get it. I'm entering a village. I should slow down. But, of course, having said that, we've had two very bad pedestrian car incidents in that part of town in the last 10 years.
Yeah. I want to go on to the Highlands Act, reauthorizing the Highlands Act, which would protect local, once again, water and lands.
So this is fascinating. When this first started, I was talking to Tim Abbott, who, of course, is the man who's the most aware of how all of our parcels of protected land connect to each other. That's what his Green Prince Collaborative at Housatonic Valley Association is about. And Tim sees this kind of very complicated jigsaw puzzle of little piece here, and they all link. And what he had said to me many years ago when they first created the Highlands Act was, this is one of the largest protected corridors in America, or certainly east of the Mississippi, even though you think of this as being such a giant, you know, superhighway with almost no trees. It's actually not. There's actually a lot of forested land here and definitely worth protecting. And so the federal government has this thing called the Highlands Conservation Act. It only covers Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, and Connecticut. Part of the reason for that being, as Tim Abbott explains in this article, when you're up farther north in like Maine and Vermont, you actually don't need it as much because you do have more forest versus highway. But you have all these animals that, in addition to the cars and the humans, animals are migrating back and forth along the East Coast. And when you break up these forests, there's no way for them to safely migrate through their natural pathways. And that's super dangerous for them and for us, ultimately, as species disappear. So these four states, which are more under threat, are getting federal support but have to get matching grants from their states. Curiously, New York and New Jersey, which we don't think of as being that super, you know, certainly upstate New York is beautifully protected, but New York and New Jersey are the states that are putting the most muscle behind this and a lot of money. Connecticut and Pennsylvania also are, you know, working with it, happy to have it. But as Tim says, we really need the support of our legislature. They have to match these grants. And we're also working with local landowners and municipalities. And they've put together an extraordinary number of packages to protect land. Chris Murphy, our senator, was here on Monday while we were on deadline and was talking about the reauthorization of the Highland Act and a doubling of the funds available from $10 million to $20 million. And they chose Goshen because Tim and the local organizations and the federal government, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, have put together a protective package for, I think, 600 acres in Goshen, which is extraordinary.
All right. Well, I want to go inside the paper right now. And
don't forget our interns.
That's right.
Very important interns.
Yes, dear. Go with the interns.
We love having the interns. It's our favorite time of year, and we have two extraordinarily good interns who should be here with me right now. It's just so hard to have three people on a telephone, but we have we've been getting extraordinary work out of them. They're both curious. They're great writers. They're eager. They're responsible. Because of the way that we're working this year where we're remote, they've been coming over to my house and reading pages on the computer with me, and we've put them in charge of our special August tabloid Compass, which is a profiles of artists who live in our area. They're going to the artist studios. They're doing interviews. They're taking beautiful portraits of them. It's going to be a really exciting issue. And I'm just so proud of them because they've really managed this largely on their own. They chose the artists they wanted to work with. They were in touch with them themselves. They set up their own scheduling, and they're doing so far a beautiful job of interviewing them and photographing them.
All right. I want to move inside now, and that is the Gypsy Moss. Now, I've known Gypsy Moss, has been around here for my whole life, but this year it's exceptional, and boy, it's amazing the defoliation that's taking place.
You can see it up on, I was at Lime Rock Park, you'll see later in this issue, for the Highland Games, and you could look up at the beautiful hills behind Lime Rock Park. I think they call it the Barrack Motif, yeah. And it really looks like Scottish heather. It's all brown, which is very sad. And I think that people are on that app, the Nextdoor app, and they're like, I think that largely it's done because it's the caterpillars. It's not the moths that are the problem. It's the caterpillars that have been munching down all of those leaves. Normally on a wetter year, they would have been controlled more by the fungus that comes up. This year it was so dry there was no fungus. But as we know, it's been pretty dry here for quite some time. So the chances are that we're going to be having situations like this in the future. So after the caterpillars went into their moth stage, the moths have 6 days to lay their eggs and then they die. So what you want to be looking for now is these egg masses on your trees that are described in the article. And we also have the link to the state's fact sheet on this. You want to look for those egg masses now, get your arborist in now to deal with it before next year's, because if you had this many caterpillars survive, that just means there are that many more moths and that many more egg masses for next year.
And also just to let people know that if you have healthy trees, they will refoliate next year. They can't take this year after year after year, but they will come back. So you know, people have to understand that. Another story though that I loved, and that is a story out of Armenia, where the drive-in was closed for a very special reason.
I mean, how fun. Lin-Manuel Miranda, his new feature film, which is at the movie house right now, and it's from his very popular play, which preceded Hamilton, called In the Heights. Really exciting-looking posters and trailers for it so far. And it was directed by the guy who directed Crazy Rich Asians, John Chu. So Lin-Manuel Miranda wanted to see it with a bunch of his friends, so what did he do? He called up the Four Brothers Drive-In Theater in Armenia, shut the place down on Saturday night, I think it was June 19th, and had a little party there. And how great is that? And very exciting, and posed for a lot of selfies, as you can see on the page and in our militant news with the staff.
All right. And after the pandemic being closed, just like the old schoolhouse in Millerton, now the Beebe Schoolhouse is open once again, Beebe Hill.
Right, in Falls Village, right on Route 7. You can't miss it. It's completely adorable. It's really a trip back in time. They preserved it beautifully, the Falls Village Canaan Historical Society. And as was the case with many businesses and organizations who took advantage of being closed down for COVID and did some renovation work. So there's a lot of, there's been some painting done and some sprucing up, and tours are now available.
All right, and the A4, the Salisbury end of summer sale.
Right. Salisbury Family Services does a ceremony every year where they honor an artist who's from the local area. This year what they decided to do is turn it back to all the local artists. They're going to have a big clothesline sale out on the green in September, and they're putting out a call to artists. Technically, today is the last day that you can apply, but they're going to do a soft ending on that. So if you're an artist, if you didn't know about this, read this article by Annabelle Baum, our excellent intern, and you can find out how to get a space. And then also we have an artisan sale coming up in Falls Village the weekend of July 10th and 11th, and there's just a ton of fun going on, including like a carpool and a bake sale and car show and just a ton of stuff.
Oh, that's great. The car show is coming back this year, which is so great.
Huge draw to Falls Village.
Something we haven't heard much of because of the pandemic, basically, but out of Region 1, the middle school sports plan now finally is moving ahead. It's not plotting anymore. It's actually moving ahead.
I admire Ann McNeil so much, the athletic director for the high school, who took this on in the first place when she didn't have to, and really wanted to help coordinate middle school sports and combine all of the schools, because you often had these schools that had like three kids on their team and were really struggling, but each of these teams, to their credit, really felt a lot of school spirit and wanted to keep it together. So Ann took a lot of pushback on this, but just sort of quietly went ahead with it, and we are now going to have a regional sports program with students playing against schools in other towns nearby. Details of it, again, in the story by Patrick Sullivan.
And you've got a story on the Highland Games, which were held at Lime Rock Park this year, the Round Hill Highland Games. A hot day, but once again, a nice turnout for that.
It was great. I was there early in the morning for various reasons, and cars were streaming in. It was fantastic. And as you can see, one of the things I love about the Highland Games is it's not really just about, you know, Scottish guys in kilts. There's diversity of people there. There's, you know, people of different ethnic backgrounds and cultures and lots of women out there in their kilts throwing big rocks and cabers and super friendly. A lot of women who had never done it before were just trying it out. And haggis, obviously, but also donuts and tea and scotch whiskey and all sorts of interesting stuff. If you missed it this year, make sure you go next year.
All right. Before we get to the calendar events and the Tri-Corner calendar, the editorial, Janet, can agreement be found on solutions for housing now? And what makes this editorial even more important, Janet, is basically Gordon Ridgway in Cornwall basically saying there are no more rentals left in Cornwall.
Right, and you know, Cornwall has tried to have housing available and have built some over the past 10 years, but you know, with an influx of residents here and a need for more services, it becomes harder and harder for people to find places to live if they'd like to work here, not just a weekend here. So we look back at the history of the Salisbury Holly Block project and what the Salisbury Housing Committee has done over the course of time to fulfill the mission that was laid out for Salisbury. 2018 is when approval was given at town meeting for the lease of the property on Millerton Road in Lakeville, owned by the town, and then analyzing the site for affordable housing units. 12 to 18. So this is something that has been voted on twice this year and has been proposed twice and approved and now is in the courts because there are people who don't want this in their neighborhood. So we talk about that and try to look forward to what we will have in our communities if this is the approach we continue to take.
You know, and you see it more and more on Facebook, Janet, people that have lost their rentals because houses have been sold.
Right.
And they're basically pleading for people out there to, you know, if there were any rentals in the area. It's just a huge warning sign. It's not even it's past the canary in the coal mine already.
Yeah, there are lots of canaries lying there.
Yeah, it's really going to affect quality of life here for the community, not only for people who can work and live here, but volunteer here and, you know, make a whole community. And this is what this area has always been about. if it is not that, we better be prepared for what it will be instead.
That's right. Letter to the editor about the Northwest Council of Governments.
Right. This is from Joanne Wotusiak in Cornwall Bridge talking about overreach by the Northwest Hills Council of Governments. She feels strongly that the COG is doing too much to control zoning in the area towns and that they should back off and towns should have control over their own zoning. Of course, the towns do, but so read her letter and keep track of coverage we do on what the COG and the town zoning committees are doing, commissions, and, you know, decide for yourself.
And you've got, once again, on your Viewpoint page, different articles, jobs for drug peddlers, inflation, and Mary Oppenheimer's article.
Right. Really, Mary Close Oppenheimer has been doing this series on housing for us for years now. Talk about the canary in the coal mine. She saw the issues a long time ago as far as what was happening to the community and has been speaking individually with people who live here and how the different columns have addressed either how they find housing or the difficulties they are having trying to find housing. So this one has a happy ending. It's a story about a family that gets into has gotten into a Habitat house. Give it a read and think about it yourself.
All right, and Encompass, I love the story, Cynthia, about the murals in Sharon.
That's happening this weekend. It's going to be super fun. There's going to be a dedication on Saturday afternoon. Details on time, et cetera, are in there. And then it's four murals on public spaces that were commissioned by Heidi Hendricks and Rafe Churchill, who have done so much for the town of Sharon. And then on Friday night, sort of as part of it, their very good friend Theo Colombe is having an opening at his gallery. Theo is one of those people who's just a traveling party, and it should be fun. And people, I think, are itching to go to some art openings, which are finally happening again. And then there's going to be a live performance on the green. Get the details in the article. The Rubens over in Cornwall, who are experienced rock summer camp teachers, and John Ruben, who is the head of the program and also a professional drummer, is also a therapist who works with children, so you know your kids are safe with him. Details on that in that article. Friday night also in Sharon, which is the place to be, is the Sharon Historical Society's cake auction, and this extraordinary cake maker, whose name is Elizabeth Mayhew and is out in Millbrook, does these work of art little beautiful cakes, and she's donated a cake for this year, as has a guy whose company is called Stud Muffin Desserts, which is such a great name. Oh, Seth Raffaelli. And then we have some information on PS21 over in Chatham, which is only really like 40 minutes away. Interesting stuff going on there. And we're so excited to have a lot of stuff to put in Compass now.
Well, it's fun because the Let Them Eat Cake alternates each year with a big antique sale and stuff like that. And then every other year it's the Let Them Eat Cake. And that's always a fun event. And I guess Brian Ross, I spoke to this morning, I guess he's going to be one of the ones auctioning off and stuff like that.
He's doing so much for that town. What a wonderful guy.
Yeah, and as a board member of the library as well. Well, so from Let Them Eat Cake to 4th of July, any special announcements for the journal, Janet, special deadlines or anything like that?
Well, we do have an early deadline for 4th of July coming up this week because, of course, the 4th is on next Sunday, and we then close for Monday because it's a federal holiday, and we will have early deadlines so that for classified ads, it's on Friday, and for regular advertising, it's on Thursday. So we do have notices in the paper about that. Give it a look. Our deadline for letters to the editor will also be Friday at noon.
All right. This week in the Lakeville Journal, of course, you can find them at tricornernews.com, also home delivery and at newsstands. We'll speak to you guys next week.
Thank you so much.
Have a good week.
Take care.
Thank you.
That is This Week in the Lakeville Journal, and once again, they are available at tricornernews.com.